It's Friday. My feet are semi up, like sort of elevated on a box. It's Feet Up Friday. What have we got to talk about? Formula One is in Germany.
Yes, it is. We are not.
Some people are.
Some people are.
We should say hello to Amy Embassano. They're attending a Formula One race, which is a radical idea in this day and age, to get off your backside and go to a circuit pay the extortionate Formula One prices for Formula One in real life.
No, I'd say it's a radical idea to be able to actually get in the door,
well,
get in
true.
The gate.
Yes, Hockenheim has seen similar weather conditions to that of Silverstone, but I haven't heard much in the way of traffic problems.
Well, actually, I think Bassano was reporting back that the transport situation in Germany was brilliant. Shuttle buses to and from, connections waiting exactly where you need them to be.
And this in spite of the deluge that Germany is suffering at the moment? That seems remarkable. It's almost as if they can organise things over there.
Yep, it sounds good. And they're doing a sterling job sending back pictures and things on Twitter, so it's all good stuff.
Awesome, it feels like I'm there.
We've only had one day of action so far, free practice Friday, and you can never read too much into Friday anyway. Plus, it was all wet.
Define action.
Well, what I don't think is good is that Pastor Maldonado was fastest at the end of the day. That's not on.
Why was he fastest?
Because he set a time and then it rained.
So when I tuned into Free Practice 2, there was no action because all the cars were in the garages and the drivers were sitting out. And it looked like it was going to be a rained-off session. It dried up for a period, did it? It got slightly better.
Yep.
Pastor put in a fast time and then it rained again.
It was so dry that they enabled DRS, but then it rained and they disabled it again. And then Schumacher crashed, which was quite fun because he did it right outside, right below a grandstand full of little German people who came rushing across to take pictures and I guess not cheer on their home driver he crashed.
Was it not also the Mercedes stand?
Was it?
I think it, because they have their own, they've got their own cordoned off section, which
right.
They built themselves.
Even more embarrassing.
I think it may have been somewhere around there. I haven't looked into the details. That would be slightly unfortunate.
He's given his team a lot of work to do overnight, but I'm sure they'll be able to fix it up in time because they've got ages before qualifying.
As did Bottas. The superstar, super sub, Friday driver, he binned Paul Senna's car.
Did he?
Free practice one, they had to repair his car. That may be the first thing the guy's done wrong.
I guess
becoming a Friday driver.
Wet conditions are always a bit tricky for the rookie drivers.
I guess, yes, that's true. It wasn't ideal for him. But I have high hopes for that guy, and it seems a shame.
Despite today.
Before today.
You can't be perfect all the time.
No. I must mention something that I'm sure will bore you silly, because it always does, but I am quite excited by Lotus's innovative rear wing DRS system. I don't know if it has a technical moniker yet. I don't know if it's got like some kind of some name that we can hang on it, but maybe double DRS is probably what will stick with it. I like what Lotus are doing with the back of their car.
I've seen it referred to as double DRS, and also someone was calling it super DRS.
Super DRS. So super that the team are frightened to run it in the race.
Yeah.
That's how super it is.
It's so super they've opted against it. But I think they said because they don't know how it will hold up in reliability terms, and that's why they don't want to run it yet.
I think Lotus suspect they might be in with a chance of a win this Grand Prix. They've been knocking on the door of the top step for a long time, and I suspect that anything that might risk that is deemed too risky for them right now, because they're in a great position. They're in a great position in the championship, and it has to be absolutely understood before running a new part. And because of the weather, they've not been able to get the data they need, which is a shame, because you've got two races. It's a back-to-back. You've got back-to-back races whereby other teams can't react and copy the system. So if they got it to work, they could have got it. You know, made a great leap forward with this innovation.
I was going to say that. It's one thing to say they don't want to lose any momentum, but equally they are going to need something to propel them forward, because they're sort of stuck in a bit of a limbo at the moment.
Well, the problem is they've got the fastest car. They've had the fastest car. They've not had the fastest drivers driving it. And when Grosjean is driving it, he's managed to get himself mixed up in with silly mistakes, and also I think for this race he's got a gearbox penalty to take.
Yep.
So wherever he finishes, he's going to be five places back. So they have the car has pace, but with this system, it may have even more pace.
But if it's the drivers that are the problem, it doesn't matter how much pace you get in the car; it's just never going to get there.
Well, that is true, but then you have Jacques Villeneuve, and you know Williams put enough pace into that car to get in the World Championship, so it can be done. You can outpace a driver, a bad driver, with a good car.
While we're talking about developments then, also, didn't McLaren bring some new stuff? And it seems like Jenson Button is actually happy.
God help us all. McLaren need to find some pace to bring the fight back to Red Bull and Ferrari, who are looking like they might run away with the Constructors' Championship. One of those two. They're making a break for freedom in that championship, and we need McLaren back in the fight. I think the McLaren car is a fast car. I don't think their race strategy and earlier season pit stop errors have made the chassis look worse than it really is, especially with Jenson Button's troubles. I think the car is pretty good, but what the drivers need is confidence, and McLaren are pinning all their hopes on new side pods for Germany, which should they want to put the car back up the field where it was at the start of the season. Effectively, they've fallen behind on the development race, and it looks like this might be enough to put them back into the fight.
Both the cars, they were fastest in FP1. They had a 1-2, but then again, as we have discussed, it was wet, so it doesn't really mean anything. Also, because it was wet, Pirelli brought those experimental hard tyres again, and they are just not getting what they want. The weather is not cooperating.
So they first attempted to try the experimental hard tyre in Silverstone, and Friday was a washout. And so they turned up with the same tyres for Germany, and Friday was a washout.
I think they did get a few laps in,
and
but not really enough to do anything useful. Although, Paul Hembree, I'm pretty sure I saw in the official statement in the press release that Pirelli sent out, he said it was far from a wasted day, as in, you know, it was fine, we did okay. But Autosport having a quote from him saying, we had a few laps, but we learned absolutely nothing. There's a difference of opinion with himself.
Paul is the king of positivity in Formula One, and no doubt he wants to put a nice spin on things. However, you cannot have gleaned anything from today's running, not of any use, especially with anything other than an intermediate or a wet tyre.
They've ditched them now, and they might bring them back for Japan, which just seems crazy to me, because doesn't it always rain in Japan?
It has. They have had tropical storms at Suzuka in the past. I don't know why Singapore... Do they know why?
He says, ideally, I'd like to take it to Suzuka and have a go there if we can get them rebuilt in time.
Rebuilt? Tyres?
Or failing that, certainly Brazil or something at the end of the year. There's not really much point in Monza, and we haven't got time for Spa.
What does that mean?
I can only read you the quotes. I cannot tell you what the man meant.
Fine. Well, okay, that makes a bit of sense. I've never heard the terminology to describe a tyre as being rebuilt. He knows what he's talking about. I don't know what he's talking about. That's all I can say. That is where we'll have to leave Germany, because that's as far as we got. It's Friday. There's only been a day of running, qualifying, and the race still to come. What has happened prior to Free Practice Friday in the Formula One world?
There was an interesting press release from Caterham, which it was essentially pages and pages of quotes from Tony, who was very, very excited because they are finally on the move to their new factory in Leafield.
So Tony was so excited, he started talking and he kept talking, and someone had to transcribe all of it.
But
1,500 words of press release.
I don't know why they decided to keep it all in the press release, he said the next time they are back in the UK, that's the trucks.
Let me just stop you before you carry on. You're not reading all of it.
No, okay. I won't read 1,500 words of it. The next time they're back in the UK, they will go straight to Leafield, and that is excellent news for everybody associated with the Caterham Group. More than 200 of the F1 team staff are making the move to Oxfordshire over the next few weeks. So actually, I don't think that is excellent news for everybody associated, because that's 200 people who have to move house. And I've moved house a lot, and it's not fun. It's not good news.
So what we can conclude from this is that you can't run a Formula One team from Norfolk, because very few people desire to move there and to work on a Formula One team in that area. So instead, Tony has moved the Formula One team to Formula One Valley in the hope that they can poach members of other teams and get them to come and work for them. They are they've relocated to the old Super Aguri factory, and that's closer to the home of Formula One in the UK.
Yeah, technical director at Caterham, Mark Smith, he added he was allowed to get a word in edgeways in the press release. He said, one of the immediate benefits of the move is in attracting people to come and work with us, which is what you just said. So that means there are 200 people who are moving house with their factory.
Yes.
And then they're also probably going to be replaced at some point. So I can't see this as good news for anyone.
Interesting. So you don't think they're going to add to the workforce? They're going to replace the people who were happy in Norfolk as soon as they've relocated west?
Yeah, I mean, what the press release is really saying is, this is great news for us, but you lot, you're not very good at your job, and we're going to have to relocate to find better people. Sorry.
Interesting. Luki in the comments pointed out that he's surprised that Caterham are moving from Norfolk, because way back when the team began, Tony was keen to prove that his team were the heart of Lotus, and they were obviously built near the old Lotus factory. But now that's gone. That all went up in smoke thanks to Mr. Danny Behar. They are no longer the Lotus team, so it doesn't matter where they are. They don't have any roots, effectively. So now they are the new Super Aguri team.
Yeah.
Confused?
Oh, dear. I mean, I don't really blame them, because if it was me, I'd want to be as far away from the Lotus name now as possible. It's caused nothing but chaos and confusion.
Run and keep running as far away from Norfolk as you can go. What I do like is the trucks have left one location. They've gone away and they have to come back to a whole other place.
That is weird.
And in the meantime, the factory moves underneath them, which seems slightly confusing. Imagine if you went to work one day and you, when you came home, your house wasn't where you left it. Instead, you have to park somewhere else.
Well, I bet they take the wrong turning and go back to the old one by accident.
They might want to reprogram their sat-navs.
Yeah. But it was also interesting because they said the factory is moving and we're on time, we're on schedule. We said, I think it was back in January, they said they were going to try and do it in August. So this is good. They're on time. But they're also still going to be undergoing redevelopment in the factory while they're there, while they're moving in, settling in, turning themselves into whatever Formula One team they want to be.
Mm.
Also, while still redeveloping the factory. I mean, that just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It's amazing how long it takes to move an F1 team, because there was rumours of this happening this time last year. And then it was confirmed in January, and they are still working on the redevelopment now. And this is an existing Formula One factory that just needs tidying up and polishing up and
maybe a bit of paint.
Yeah, a lick of paint and a few new carpets. How can it take so long?
Other news this week, there was another Marussia statement with more on the Maria De Valotta crash.
Oh, good Lord. Do I need to have another rant about Marussia?
No.
Oh, I kind of do, actually. But go on, tell me what happened.
Isn't
in the
just the same rant over again?
Go on, tell me what they said. Remind me. I vaguely recall reading this and thinking, oh, my goodness, I can't believe they managed to get worse than last week when I complained about them. But what did they say?
They said they have excluded the car from...
Oh,
the cause
yes.
of the accident.
That's right. Yes, their car is practically perfect in every way, and it was nothing to do with them, even though they...
That isn't really what they said.
What did they say? Quote it to me. That's how I read it.
We are satisfied that the findings of our internal investigation exclude the car as a factor in the accident.
Okay, so that's a non-denial denial?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends. If you are dead set against them like you are...
I'm not dead set against them. I'll tell you what... quite annoyed me. You know how last time I complained that their social media person is beyond hopeless?
Yep. Which I don't think is true. I think clearly following instructions, so it's not their fault.
I think their team's approach to social media is beyond hopeless.
Better.
Right. The latest statement was put out on Monday. I think it was put out Monday morning. And rather than reference the fact that the statement had appeared on their website on Twitter, they tweeted something entirely obscure, like, do remember that our website is your pit stop to Formula One news. And what? Hold on a second. There's nothing damning in this statement. There's no reason to hide this statement from the world. Why reference it in such an obtuse and bizarre way? Our website is your pit stop to everyone news. What? Give me a break. Anyway, so that annoyed me. But also, I felt that the statement tiptoed around a lot of unanswered questions. For example, if the car is so wonderfully perfect and in no way to blame for anything, who is to blame? Because somebody must be. Is it the driver? Is it the person who put the driver in the car? Who signed off the day of testing? Who parked the truck where they parked it. I mean, somebody somewhere must be responsible for it. And Marusha are refusing to point any fingers or answer any questions. It seems like they've said, right, the car's fine. Let's not talk about it anymore.
They didn't say they're not going to talk about it anymore. They said that they've looked into it. They're happy that the car isn't fault. And that's good because it means that Glock and Pick probably aren't going to crash anytime soon. And they're now they're waiting for the other investigations as well. They've not said, that's it. We're never talking about it ever again. Shh, it never happened.
So you're expecting more from them?
I'm sure there will be more in the future. I think this was just like an interim thing. And they can't just say, if it was her fault, they can't turn around and say, yeah, she did it. It's her fault. She's still in the hospital. Well,
yeah, I know that. But what I'm saying is, the thing is, if the driver was at fault, somebody said somebody trained the driver. Somebody put the driver into a simulator and said the driver is capable of driving this car. So that person presumably must be at fault too. Somebody signed it off. Somebody took the money and said, yeah, we'll give you a driver's test. We'll give you a test. Can I give Marusha £1 million and will they just plonk me into a Formula One car? Without any, no questions asked.
Is not that the after sort of this. Team
that, is that the sort of team that they are? I don't know. That's what I'm wondering. If you have enough money, could you just buy any old test with Marusha and they wouldn't care? They just say, yeah, you can have a day in our car. We'll drive you out to an airfield, plonk you in the chassis and just press go. Off you go. See how well you do. I don't know. I think there's more questions to be asked. I'm surprised.
Of course
the FIA,
there are.
I'm surprised the FIA aren't publicly asking them.
Because it's not finished yet.
It sounds finished. We'll see. It sounds like they've done their investigation and they're happy that the car's fine. Thanks.
The one thing we didn't do when we were talking about Germany earlier is make our predictions. And we all know that who I predict for a race is exceedingly important.
I would like to question that statement.
Well, it's important for them because it means they're probably going to lose.
Right. So, okay, fine. This is important. We need to know then who is going to do badly this weekend, according to Christine.
Who is going to win is Sebastian Vettel, because the Red Bull looks quite fast and it's his home race, so he'll get some oomph from the crowd.
Isn't it a Formula One fact that he has never won here?
Facts were made to be broken. I'm sure that's how the saying goes.
Okay. And that's, do you know what? Here's the real problem with this. I think you're right.
Well, you know what else? I make these predictions with my boss. I've had this discussion many times with you.
Who did your boss predict?
He also predicted Vettel. Now, we haven't gone for the same person since Australia, where we both went for Jensen Button, and we both got it right. So I reckon this time we're on for a winner. I think the curse is going to be broken, and Vettel is going to win.
I think the Red Bull is going to be mighty. There was a brief, brief moment earlier today when I thought, if that Lotus's new system is as good as it looks in the pictures and works as well as it should work in theory, nobody's going to catch the Lotus. If they haven't got the confidence to run it, then I think it's Vettel's race to lose.
Two interesting comments. Lou said, Formula One fact, Seb has never won in July, and it's July. Is that true? How weird. Must be something about the summer months.
Even like. In his most dominant season, he never won in July.
I have not checked this fact.
I would suggest he probably hasn't won in August either, mostly because since he came to Formula One, there's been a
that
summer
doesn't
break.
Count.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
And Will,
well, I believe Lou.
Will said he's backing Hamilton because he'd love him to do it on his 100th race, which is good. But isn't it also Kovalainen's 100th race? So he should also win.
With that logic.
Yeah.
There's an interesting thing. In theory, I forget how many drivers debuted at the same weekend, but in theory, it should also be, this weekend should be Side Podcast's 100th race, because our first Grand Prix that we covered was Lewis Hamilton's debut, correct?
Yeah, but
so if he's done 100 races, we should have done 100 races.
We've had long absences.
We've missed quite a few.
Yeah.
It's probably our 50th, roughly.
Yeah.
Which is slightly embarrassing. Kovalainen and Hamilton, and who else debuted on that weekend? I would have thought more than those two drivers started in 2007 and have raced in every Grand Prix since. That makes me feel quite old, by the way.
What, 100 races?
Yeah. I mean, we that's...
It's only like 5 years or so, isn't it?
That's a long time to be podcasting.
Yeah.
5 years.
That is true.
You would have thought the fad would have burned out by now. The comments have confirmed that although Heikki Kovalainen has attended 100 Grand Prix, the fact that his gearbox failed whilst driving for Team Lotus means it's only his 99th start. That means he's got to wait one more race.
One more week.
Or more for some celebratory cake.
That's another race that Hamilton has won then.
Oh, harsh.
That is almost everything we have to talk about this week, except for one piece of news that is really important and we seem to have missed it so far, and that is that there is a new leader at the top of Christine's rankings.
It's all change at the top. Mr. Fernando Alonso, he's lost his crown.
Yep, I think he's been leading it for several months, since he joined Twitter, whenever that was. He has been pulling away, making quite a lead for himself. But recently, other drivers have been catching him up, and this week, Jenson Button overtook him.
The thing is, Fernando Alonso, I love his tweets, but they are getting a little repetitive. He's running out of ideas.
Well, you know, you go to races, you take pictures with the fans, and I try to only give points for the one thing once.
For originality. Originality wins on Christine's rankings. And Jenson Button, he's the man, because he's got his own triathlon coming up, and he's doing it for charity. That's earned him a lot of points. He's also got Lou on his side.
Finding things, rooting for him, and
making sure he gets every point that he deserves. And so Fernando Alonso, he is no longer the runaway leader on Christine's rankings.
But it is close at the top. Button, Alonso and Hamilton are all within 3 points. So it is really close. And just like Lou, you can make the difference by finding things that I haven't spotted that deserve points.
Can I get Fernando Alonso back to his rightful position at the top of the leaderboard, or is that cheating? Am I allowed to help too?
You certainly
I do want to champion Fernando Alonso on Twitter, because I think it has shown a completely different side to him. It's made him more likable. He's a completely different person than you. Well, he's a different character than you would maybe expect.
I think he has changed a lot of people's opinions about him since he has opened up on the social network.
That is the power of Twitter.
It's been very interesting. And I think that's partly why he managed to sustain such a lead, because it was just like every week something new and exciting that you just wouldn't expect from Fernando Alonso. Great photography, all these pictures and things that he does with the fans that we just didn't know about before.
It's very close to the top. Lewis Hamilton is also in with a shout. So if you're a Lewis Hamilton fan and you think he deserves more points, and if you're keeping a close eye on him and you spot something that Christine has missed, how do people let you know about points worthy doings?
Well, there's a form on sidepodcast.com/rankings that you can fill in, or you can tweet me at F1 rankings, or there's always emailing christine@sidepodcast.com.
Good stuff. And if you follow F1 rankings on Twitter, you can make sure you never miss out on any interesting goings on from the drivers.
So that's it. That's all we've got. We've done the news. We've made our predictions. I'm pretty sure that's all we have to say.
There is one last thing on my list.
Okay.
And that is this coming Thursday, prior to the next Feed Up Friday, I guess, interestingly enough, is going to be the very last ever Side Podcast real life meetup. We're doing more and more and more of these virtual online live things. And we'll be expanding them later this season and into next season. There'll be more virtual things and there'll be more meetups, international global meetups. But this week, we are bringing an end to real-life meetups in London. It will be the final, very final, and I genuinely mean this. This is the last time you will ever get to meet me. Ever. So if you listen to this show ahead of Thursday the 26th, is it?
Yep.
If you're listening to this show ahead of Thursday the 26th and you're near the Coal Hole on the Strand in London, do come along. Do come and meet us. It's the last time you're going to have a chance to do that.
Well, you're so dramatic about it. But it's worth saying that it's the last official one, but people can still write posts about their individual meetups that they're having. And
I'm absolutely for other people getting together with each other and having meetups and
We will
talk about it on the show, and we can help get people together. So long as I don't have to come to it, you can have as many meetups as you like.
Yes.
I don't want to sound like a big grumpus, but it's not my thing.
It's
I'm definitely all about the online and the virtual.
It's been tricky the last few that we've tried to attend, and
you didn't
we've sort of come to the point where it's like the money and time that we've spent on these things would be better spent on the virtual and embracing a wider audience. And that is what we would like to concentrate on, especially when we have so many plans and things that now that we've revamped the website and everything, there's so much that we want to do with it. And it's about time we started doing it instead of saying, we've got so many plans doing them. So that is next Thursday. There are details on the website if you want to turn up. I will link to it in the show notes. And that really is all that we have to talk about. I think I've said that about three times already. But it's Germany this weekend and then it's Hungary next weekend. But we may or may not be back with the show in between times.
Will there be enough Formula One news to sustain our momentum?
That would be three in a row, three podcasts in a row. We haven't done that for a long time.